Now, how do you know Dr. Harbert?
Yeah, Harbert, through the Veterans Caucus of the American Academy of Physician Assistants. Ken is actually a founding board member of that organization, and I basically one of the charter members.
Great. Great. Well, I know he's done great things for our program here in Knoxville, so...
Give him a hard time the next time you see him.
We enjoy that.
We do enjoy that, yeah.
So any opportunity we get, we look forward to that. So
glad we're on the same sheet of music.
Right, right. We just want to start with a little background history. Just anything you want to tell us about yourself, but especially why you decided to enter into the PA profession.
Well, that's interesting. It has to do with Dr. Pat Smith, sort of indirectly.
Okay.
In that I was a Special Forces medic during the Vietnam War.
Okay.
You know, Green Beret type. And I was at a classified Special Forces project in Con Tum, Vietnam, which is where Dr. Smith's hospital was located.
Uh-huh.
And because Special Forces has still a close relationship to the Mountain Yard people, or the Malayo Polynesian residents who inhabit the Central Highlands of Vietnam, who are not ethnically Vietnamese.
Right.
But these folks would work as soldiers for us, irregular troops in the mountain areas, and with certain other units like strike forces and reconnaissance units and what have you.
There
developed a real love, a real affection between American Special Forces and troops and the Mountain Yard tribes.
Right.
Because I knew of the Mountain Yard Hospital that Dr. Smith started in Kantu, I would go over and volunteer my services or see what I could do for them from time to time whenever I had some downtime.
Right.
And, you know, occasionally in case I had someone to fall off my jeep or, you know, a few IVs or something.
Right.
But I got to meet and know another former Special Forces medic who was working there as a physician assistant.
Okay.
He was also a volunteer there. His name was Tom Coles, C-O-L-E-S. I watched Tom work, and I spoke with him, and I said, you know, you're on a doc, and you're no longer a Special Forces medic, even though we're pretty highly qualified. And you obviously have a lot of clinical skills. What is it that you do? What are you?
Right.
He briefed me on the physician assistant profession, graduate of the University of Washington, FedEx, and said that I should consider this. And as a matter of fact, he would write a letter to the people at the University of Washington recommending me. Well, he did, and I applied, and I got accepted. So it was very convenient, too, because when I came back to the United States in 71, September, I was accepted into the class starting in November, so I was able to transition very well.
Great. Well, that was one of the questions that we had, because we've, you know, heard a little about the MedX program and just wondered, I honestly don't know a whole lot about it, and just wondered, you know, how it compared to traditional PA training today, because it's not, the MedX...
Are you a PA student?
We are PA students, yes.
You haven't been taught about the MedX concept? I am shocked beyond description.
No, not...
We had one guest lecturer come in and talk about the founding of the PA field, and he mentioned the MedX program to us briefly and how it was started, but it was more kind of a brief overview, kind of like a five-minute thing, so we really don't know too much about it.
About the time that Dr. Stead started the first physician assistant program at Duke.
Uh-huh.
Just at the same time, acting on the behest of a Surgeon General, a guy by the name of Richard Smith, a physician working for the Public Health Service, was asked to help start something in the Pacific Northwest.
The physician shortage in that area. He came up with a little bit different concept for the training of physician assistants. As MedX, this is a competency-based PA program.
Okay.
It opened, I think, about 70, I want to say 70, maybe a little earlier, but I was a graduate in 73, so no, it opened earlier, I think maybe 68, 69,
because Tom Coles is a graduate, and it was a two-year program.
Okay.
So, yeah, about the same time that Duke started, just shortly thereafter, Dick Smith started the MedX program at the University of Washington, Seattle, and was very instrumental in getting the state legislature to pass enabling laws for PAs to practice.
Right. No, it's a training calendar was similar to now we have, you know, 15 months didactic, 12 months clinical. Is the MedX program kind of similar?
I don't know what it is today, but when I graduated, we had probably about 3 or 4 months of didactic and then a year of clinical rotations.
Okay.
Then we were certified as PAs.
Right.
Or actually as MedX, same thing as PAs.
Right.
And enabled us to take the national board exam and go on from there.
Great.
That was one of my questions, because we were told about Richard Smith and kind of the founding of the program, but we weren't quite sure how it was different or if it's the same concept. It's just starting it in the West.
He's out at the University of Hawaii doing the MedX concept internationally.
Okay.
And I worked for him in 1974 in Micronesia to help start a MedX program out there.
Okay.
What specialty areas have you worked in as a PA before you were an educator?
Family practice most of the time and urgent care.
Okay. What was your favorite thing about being a practicing PA?
I think the family practice concept is what I really came to know and love. The fact that you start with a patient, for example, take a young woman, you're giving her her athletic physical,
right,
and you're counseling her on safe, everything from safe sex to wearing a helmet when she wears a bike and everything else, and then a couple of years later you see her for her prenatal checkup. She's been married and now she's having a child, and then a year or so later, you see her child for a well baby checkup.
Right.
The transition, it's the family involvement that just means so much to not only the family, but I think the practitioner as well.
Absolutely. Now, were you in a small area as far as population goes? Or were you practicing in a small area?
No, I moved around. I spent most of my time, I think, in San Clemente, California, which is a relatively small beach town.
Okay.
We had a surfing team, if you believe that, at the high school.
Wow.
Oh, yeah, not, we wouldn't know much about that.
Surfing.
Right. Don't know much about that in our mountains.
Not really.
Do we have on the lake or anything
here? We do have the lake. We do have a lake and people ski and stuff like that, but no surfing around here. We wish we did.
Now, tell us about the time you spent working with the Alaska Pipeline Project?
As I mentioned, I went to work with MedX Micronesia, and then in 75, Bill Hardy, who was the medical director out there in Micronesia, became the medical director for the Alaska Pipeline Project.
Okay.
And he contacted me and asked me if I'd like to come up on the pipeline and work as a medical technician, and money looked pretty good, so off I went.
So what was that like? Were you a provider to the men and women working on the pipeline? What kind of things did you see?
My camp was in a place called Sheep Creek, which just coincidentally had the highest piece of elevation on the pipeline and the lowest.
Oh, wow.
Went from a mountainous environment to a canyon environment before the pipeline finally went into the terminal at Valdez.
Right.
And I took care of anywhere from, at one time the population of the camp was 400 all the way up to about 1,200 people seasonally, depending on the work there.
Sure.
And I was it for the medical care for the camp.
Okay.
I did have the possibility to evacuate patients who needed evacuation to the hospital about 26 miles away at Valdez.
Right.
But sometimes weather just prohibited us getting people out. And there were some pretty spectacular things that happened. I would rappel down cliffs, for example, to go get patients who tumbled down there. And one time there was a gunshot wound at one of the lodges that, but the gunman's still around.
Wow.
And just a whole bunch of stuff, because we not only were responsible for our pipeline camp, but with an agreement with the state of Alaska, we also were responsible for medical treatment for the highway that included our pipeline area.
Sure.
So, you know, anywhere from auto accidents to shootings to what have you. There we were.
So you saw a variety of things, I'm sure.
Yes, ma'am.
Okay, so with your military background, you mentioned that you had served in Vietnam. Where else were you stationed during your career?
I was active duty and reserve.
Okay.
I started my active duty service in 65, got to Vietnam in 67, all the time as a special forces soldier. Left Vietnam for a year in 69 and 70 and came back in 70 and 71. During the 69 and 70 period, I was in Thailand doing pretty much the same thing.
Okay. So now, what was your rank when you retired?
Major.
Okay.
Started out as an enlisted man, was a warrant officer for a while, and then retired out as a major.
Right.
I started my military career in Vietnam and ended it in Iraq.
Oh, wow. What was it like there when you were there? Same as...
I was right on the tail end of the invasion.
Okay.
My job was, I became the public health officer for Baghdad.
Oh, I bet so that was interesting.
I had to assess the status of the hospitals in Baghdad, the waterworks, medical schools, the supply system, the zoo.
Well, and the zoo fit in that as well?
Yeah.
So, I mean, what was it like over there? What was your assessment?
Well, obviously Saddam had other things in mind for money from the oil for food program, because he let the infrastructure of the hotel, the hospitals just deteriorate.
Oh, wow.
There was hardly any medicine at all, especially no cancer medicine. The medicine that would come into the country would generally be parceled out to his favorites politically and for money.
Sure.
Cancer, Children's Cancer Hospital would be somewhere where you took your kid to die. Not necessarily get treated.
Sure.
Some of the hospitals maintained themselves after the government collapsed.
Right.
Some of them were taken over by militias. Some of them were thoroughly looted and destroyed. Just all dependent.
Oh, my goodness. Well, that was going to be my next question. You know, how do you think they would compare today? But I think you just answered that it just depends on probably, you know, the region they're in and who's in control there.
I believe there was I can't remember how many floors, I think about 20-story hospital in downtown Baghdad, which is their sort of showplace hospital. And each floor was occupied by a different Iraqi militia.
Oh, my goodness.
We had to go in and disabuse them of the idea that they could hold the health service hostage.
Oh, my goodness. Tell us a little bit about your teaching career. How long have you been doing that? What kind of made you, you know, come out of the clinic and into the classroom?
Yeah, started with Samuel Merritt College in 2001. I was a clinical coordinator and assistant professor there for a couple of years until I was alerted for the Iraqi invasion.
Right.
2003. While I was in Iraq, my wife had an opportunity to come to Toro University in Nevada to help start the PA program and found the university, actually.
Oh, in Savannah?
Basically told the Toro people that you want one, you get two.
Right.
she brought me with her as clinical coordinator, and I've remained coordinator since 2004 here.
Daddy.
Came back from Iraq and she said, "Don't unpack, honey. We're moving."
Exactly. So did you say she was at South University?
Toro University.
Oh, okay. So what do you think about being in the classroom? What do you think about the future of PAs? Do you have hope for us?
I don't know hope at all, of course. Are you kidding? I'm actually the clinical coordinator here at the program. I teach a few classes, but my primary reason for being here is to place students on rotation.
Oh, okay.
Follow them up.
Yeah.
I'm certainly a proponent of the PA concept. My son is actually applying to become a PA here at the Toro.
Oh, great.
Applying to the program as well as others. I recommend the PA profession highly, of course.
Oh, yeah.
Not only do we have a great future, but with the current way that the healthcare is being structured, I think physicians are going to be not in the services of PAs quite a bit to help them.
Right.
Help them open the doors to many, many primary care patients who heretofore did not have access to care.
Exactly. So what would you say is the best part about being involved with the education of PAs?
It's just great. We, at this program, for example, have a philosophy, a culture, if you will, on mentoring PA students. We are student-friendly here. We have an open-door policy. When the door's open, you can come in.
Right.
We have the ability to help shape careers and professions of future physician assistants to point them in the direction of service to the underserved, to help mentor them and show them what professionalism is. And basically, I teach that compassion and that patient-centered care philosophy that is so important.
Absolutely.
Expanded the specialty.
Right, absolutely. Now, we understand you're a movie star.
Mm-hmm. No, but I haven't had a part in one movie.
Pearl Harbor, yeah, military chaplain. Is that true?
But, you know, when I retire next year, I plan on getting back into that.
Absolutely. What was that like?
I thought, actually, probably the most fun I've ever had with my clothes on. Yeah.
That we could talk about right now anyway, huh? So how did this opportunity come up for you?
I have a friend who's also in special operations for a long time who became an advisor to the movie industry on combat tactics and techniques.
Oh, yeah.
Pearl Harbor had a big mass casualty situation, as you might recall. And he contacted me to be the technical advisor for the medical portion of all of that. So when you see all that, you see sitting the oscillating ventilator there in Pearl Harbor in the medical department.
Yeah.
That's sort of my stuff, the way I advise them to do, the mark the wounded, the mass casualty situations and all that stuff.
Right.
And for example, how to stock the, medical shelves with things that were pertinent to 1941.
Right.
Instead of today. But then the director, I was spending most of my time with him, Michael Bay, and he turned to me one day and he said, "Doc, I want you to be the priest." Hey, do I get a script or any lines? No, I want you to be spontaneous.
My gosh.
Yeah, a little. So much the better. Put on a wardrobe. There I went.
That's wonderful. That's right place at the right time, huh? That sounds really neat. I was trying to look at our questions we had written down here to see if there was anything that we haven't spoken with you about. What's it like, I guess, being a PA family?
It's certainly, from my standpoint, it's very enjoyable. For example, I just had a partial knee replacement.
Oh, wow.
I have a little...
Sorry.
She doesn't cut me any slack on it.
What's that? She didn't cut you any slack?
We work together. We're both strong proponents of the PA profession. We've become involved as a husband and wife team in the Nevada Physician Assistant Affairs. We're both very active in the Nevada Academy. Vicki was the president, board member. I've been Nevada House of Delegates representative for years now. Chief delegate and associate delegate.
Yeah.
You said you're in the House of Representatives?
We're very happy to have brought what we can to the profession here in Nevada. And I might add that, you know, before when there was no PA school here, you can see the contrast after the school got started. Not only have we added a lot of members to the Nevada Academy and the profession here because the school is here, but also we can have some influence on the legislative process, speaking from the standpoint of educators and university.
Right, absolutely. I know Tennessee this year is, the PA Association here is gearing up for a big, I won't say fight, but I know that the legislators are going to be looking at scope of practice for PAs and things like that here in the state of Tennessee because of some things our medical association has brought up and some malpractice suits and things like that. So I know wherever we can have PAs and educators involved with those lawmakers, because we find out a lot of times it's just, they just don't know. They don't understand enough about the profession, and they need to be educated by people in that field and not, you know, from doctors and, you know, people who think they know what they're talking about.
A lot of people out there don't know what PA is.
Absolutely. Absolutely. And that's something we're overcoming every day still, I think. So, well, thank you so much for taking some time to talk to us.
Yeah, we appreciate it.
Did we?
You're welcome. Do you want any more about Pat Smith and that whole thing? I have a little Pat Smith story.
Okay.
Sure,
let's
that's
hear
great.
It.
Oh, yeah.
You know, Dr. Smith at the Mountain Yard of the Minquay Hospital took on all comers of the Mountain Yard tribes without any questions. She basically was very humanitarian. Didn't care about your politics or anything else. If you were hurt or sick, she was there to help you.
Right.
And the one little story I have about that is that on a combat operation one time, I was on a patrol that was using some foreign weapons. The project that I worked with, you could pretty well choose, as long as it was available, what weapon you wanted to carry in the field.
Oh.
And this particular incident, this particular time, the team was carrying Uzis, which is the Israeli submachine gun at 9mm.
Okay.
And the reason that's important is that the American, all of our other weapons and the communist bloc weapons were of different calibers. There were no 9mm weapons carried by either side.
Oh, okay.
We ambushed a group of Mountain Yard Viet Cong. Hard as it is to believe, some of the Mountain Yards did throw themselves in with the communists on their side.
Okay.
So we ambushed a Viet Cong patrol, which was composed of Mountain Yards, and noted that we wounded three of them but did not kill them. And they managed to drag their comrades away, and we shot at each other for a while, and that was that. Well, 2 days later, three Mountain Yards with 9mm wounds showed up at Dr. Smith's hospital.
Oh, wow.
They well knew where they could go to get good care, and that was from her, without any questions asked. And of course, you know, they basically, when they were off limits to us, and they were patients, and that's the way they were treated.
Oh, my goodness.
That's pretty crazy. Yeah. Well, I guess that's true with the most of the legal aspects of it. You have to treat them, so.
That's right. But, you know, when they become wounded, they become patients, and that's a whole different ethical and moral way to look at it.
Absolutely. Now, Emily brought up legal aspects. Have you ever been involved with any legal dealings when you were in your PA practice?
Thank heavens, I haven't been sued.
Yeah.
You might imagine, once in a while, the threat of litigation raises its ugly head here at the university if students are dissatisfied, especially if they're kicked out.
Oh.
You said that you were in the legislature in Nevada, so have you been a part of any kind of revisional contributions to the PA profession when you've been there?
I must give most of the credit to my wife, who's Vicki Jan Padgett, who is the chair of the legislative committee for our state academy, Nevada Academy of Physicians. But there's one particular battle that we managed to fight and win, and that is that in Nevada, as in, I think, five or six other states, there are two medical boards. There's one for osteopaths and one for allopaths, MDs and DOs. So there then were two different licensure mechanisms, and still are, for PAs in the MD and DO realms. The problem with the
actually licensing PAs. They were certifying them to work with a particular physician.
Oh.
So that if you worked for Dr. Jones and he or she decided they didn't like you anymore, or they died, or they got divorced, or whatever, and they left practice, or they fired you, you were hanging out there to dry until you found somebody else that you could possibly work for.
Wow.
You didn't have your own license. Certified. Press that with the state legislature, and you know, did the committee testimony and so forth, and basically got the law changed. So now POs in both DOA and the tracks are licensed.
Okay, yeah, that is pretty big.
Yeah, that would be a scary place to be.
I know, that would not be, that would not be a good position to be in at all. So, I think, I'm trying to look over and see if, is there anything else that, that you want to tell us just for information or think that would be good for us to know or any suggestions?
We have a united approach and present a united front to our legislators and the public. Even though we can, you know, cuss and discuss among ourselves in private, when it comes to a joint action, we must be unified. We all should belong to the AAPA and our state chapters. It's just really important.
I agree with you. This is Jennifer talking now, and I am our student representative from South College to the Tennessee Academy of Physician Assistants. And I think that, you know, that being a part of that, you just, you learn so much more than you do sitting in your classroom or working in your clinic. You know, you see the bigger picture and what, you know, our profession as a whole is facing, and, you know, any decisions that are made affecting, a certain specialty, you know, doesn't affect just that specialty, but it affects the whole profession. And that's what I've been trying to get across when I come back just fired up from our quarterly board meetings. You know, I've been trying to tell my classmates that we're not going to be students forever, you know, and we have to go ahead and start realizing there's a lot of things going on that are of interest to us and the future of our profession, and we need to be active and have our voice heard. And I don't know if you know a man named Don Black. He's the president of our academy, and he is so passionate about, you know, doing letter writing campaigns and visiting our legislature and inviting them into clinics so they can see exactly what it is that PAs do in Tennessee. And so he's been a really good example to get us fired up here. But you're absolutely right. It's, you know, we have to all kind of join together on that front.
I mean, like I've told my students, you know, even if you say, here's my money, take care of my profession, you know, at least we can count you.
Right.
It's so important for legislators, you know, when they look at, well, how many people do you represent? Well, 12. You have to represent most every PA in your state.
Absolutely.
And get their attention. Because you know the nurses' union is right there with their representation.
You're exactly right. Exactly right. And they've done a lot of things right from a political standpoint. We definitely need to follow their lead. So, well, thank you so much for your time.
We really appreciate it.
You're welcome, ladies. And Jennifer, take care of that allergy.